Okay, so, volume. And now, okay, so, good afternoon. Last time we finished up doing some sort of mapping our arrays to, arrays in C and things like that to actual cache misses. So we had the exercise before this. So here we have a new one, and we're going. We have array of zero is at the beginning of a cache block, because we remembered that that was a problem before, that we needed to worry about where is an array relative to the cache. And our question was here is we have a one set cache, or simplest possible cache, with 8-byte blocks. Remember, 8 bytes equals 2 array elements. And the question is, how many cache misses do we have in this case? And let's assume the array starts, sorry, the data cache starts empty. And yeah, as it says, only thing the array uses the data cache, everything else is done in registers. Answer or
clarification?
Yeah.
Do we know if
the array zero is at the beginning of a cache block? So yes. Yes, we know the array is aligned. Question or. So who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks that we're gonna have, we'll do exactly one miss, exactly 2 misses, exactly 3 misses,
you?
Exactly 4 misses, you? So we have a split between 3 and 4. I get 4 misses. And I have this worked out here. That we're going to access array of zero, and that's going to make the cache contain array of 0 and 1, because we have to get whole cache blocks, right? We've divided up our memory into cache blocks, that has to be loaded. We access array of 2, that's going to read an array of 2 and 3. We access array of 1, that reads in 0 and 1. We access array of 3, that reads in 2 and 3. So because of how our memory is divided up into cache blocks, we end up with 4 misses. All 4 of the accesses to the array are misses. Some questions on how I came up with that answer? Okay, so let's expand things a bit and move on to talk about going up to 2 sets. I guess before I do that, yeah, well, that's what we're going to do next. So we're going to do this with 2 sets, and I've just kind of expanded our access pattern. Before I do that, just briefly ask for questions about things we covered last time. So, you know, we're going to work up to working with C accesses. We talked about, you know, simulating direct map caches. That's what we're redoing now with C code. And we talked about conflict misses happening. In this case, they're happening kind of on purpose, it looks like. Kind of we have the worst case for that. And, well, not conflict misses, they're capacity misses right now. And we talked about adding associativity. So we're going to get to, well, what does associativity mean in terms of the C code? Well, remember, this meant that we had, when we had 2 things that mapped to the same set, we had multiple choices. But we're first going to say, well, when did 2 things map to the same set with C code? And then we're going to look at how associativity affects that. And when we talked about associativity, we talked about replacement policies. And we're just going to try to use least recently used. We've learned that, you know, that's not always what we implement. mainly because, you know, you just can't implement replace and reuse for large numbers of ways efficiently. So questions on things we covered last time before we go back to our two-set exercise? And work our way back up through all our types of caches in C code. Right. Okay. So we have our two-set cache. So all I've changed is now the cache has set 0 and set 1. And we have our array. And we have our blocks of the array that are mapped to that cache. Who'd like some more time? Okay, not many people. So who thinks we have, two or fewer cache misses? Okay, how about four or fewer cache misses? A few people. Okay, how about five or six cache misses? How about 7 or 8 cache misses? Okay, so our consensus is on 4, and that is indeed what I get. So to reason about what's going on here, we have two sets. We have to think about what's happening with each of those two sets. So I need to think of, well, how does the array map to it, the sets? And I'm going to assume that array of 0 maps to set 0. That might not be true. If so, I just renumber the sets, and it is true. Like, I just pretend swap set 1 and 0, and nothing else changes. And I'm going to get the same answer because, you know, as long as things map consistently to the different sets, it doesn't change anything. And the way our mapping worked is that, you know, consecutive parts of the array are going to map to, you know, consecutive sets. So we have this kind of wraparound, and each block of the cache holds two array elements, so we have 0 and 1, 2 and 3, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, and 0 and 1 and 4 and 5 map to one set, and 2 and 3 and 6 and 7 map to another. So I can do my same kind of accounting I did before. So we have our mapping of how the cache sort of divides up the array into blocks. And in this case, the blocks go to different indices. And I can keep track of my full contents of the cache like so. Now, this is rather tedious, but there's some things we can do that make it a lot less tedious, which is going to be useful later on because a real cache has, you know, hundreds of sets. And I probably don't want to write out a table with 100 things in it. And kind of the key observation is what goes on in one set doesn't affect the other. Right? Each set kind of works independently. So we can kind of do this as two subproblems. We have the subproblem for the set 0 accesses. And I just need to worry about what's in set 0. And I have the subproblem for the set 1 accesses, and I just need to worry about what's in set 1. And it doesn't really matter for this what happens in the other, so I can just do these two, add the number of misses together, and get my answer of 4. So that's kind of one way of approaching this problem. Questions, how I, you know, this sort of process. Let's try here. guess we're comfortable with these, so let's go on to this one. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we're gonna have, say, two or fewer misses? Okay, exactly three misses, exactly four, exactly five, exactly six, exactly seven, exactly eight. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on five. And my approach for this is I first figure out how do these things map to sets, and I say, well, here I've marked the ones that are in set zero, all the others are in set one. If I had more than two sets, I'd mark, you know, which are in set one, which are in set two, or like look for a pattern. And I can look at each set independently. So first I'll start with set zero. So after our first access here, we're going to have set 0 is going to contain, I guess, I'll just write set 0. So after this, 0 contains indexes 0 and 1. Then, and this is, oh, I should, the important part. So this is a miss, and after miss, then 0 contains 0 and 1. Then I access element 1. And element one is zero or one, so this is a hit, and then zero still contains zero and one, set zero. Then I access four, this is a miss, and then zero, set zero is now going to contain four and five, because we just accessed element four. We're going to read that into that set. Then I have the access to five, that's going to be a hit since it contains four and five. I can repeat this analysis for my set one accesses. So we're going to have our first access is going to be a miss. And then set one is going to contain two and three. And then I have my access to six, that's a miss. And then set one is going to contain six and seven. Then I have my access to seven, that's a hit. You know, and that doesn't change what's in set one. It's still going to be six and seven. Then I access element two. That's a miss. And that's going to make set one contain two and three. So I end up with one, two, three, four, five misses across both sets. So questions on how I figured that out? Okay, so let's get to more realistic sizes. So here I have a 2 kilobyte direct map cache. So that means, you know, if I have 2 kilobytes divided by 16 byte blocks, that means I have 512 sets. And so I have my cache with set 0 up to set 511. And set 0 is going to map to, we have our array, 0 through 3, because I have 16 byte, that's 4 int blocks. Set 1 is going to map to 4 to 7, indexes 4 to 7, all the way up to set 512 sets. It's not 512 sets because that's not how I do division. So 2 kilobytes, that's 2 to the 11 bytes divided by 2 to the 4. This should be 2 to the 7 sets, or 128 sets. So we have set 0 up to 127. And if we go up to 127 and multiply by 4, we'll find out that this is going to be set 127. When we just keep going, 4 to 7, 8 through 11, and so on, we'll find out that this is going to be 508 through 511 is the indices. And then 512 through 515 is going to go back to set 0. We just ran out of, you know, sets to go through. It goes back to set 0. And that means 1 is going to map again to not 516 through 519 and so on. So with that figured out, let's figure out how many cache misses do we expect in this case. Question back there? Yes.
Is there a set 128?
Is there a set 128? No, because I started numbering with zero. And assuming I did my math correctly, 128 times 16 is 2048. Does that answer your question? Who'd like some more time? Couple. So who thinks we're going to have, let's start with three or fewer misses? Okay. A couple people. How about exactly four misses? Okay. Exactly five. Six or more. Okay, we have a split here, so definitely need to go through this one a little more carefully. So I worked out that elements 0 through 3 are together in a cache block because the arrays, we're assuming the array starts at the beginning of the cache block, which I didn't write down explicitly, but I'm trying to do. So given that, we have this mapping where, you know, I'm saying set 0 corresponds to array 0 through 3. You know, maybe if it doesn't, like, we're just renumbering the sets, not a big deal. And that means that array 512 through 515 also map to the same set. And this is because, well, that's 2 kilobytes apart. We had this kind of picture of the mapping where, you know, we said if they're that far apart, like, we kind of have things that far apart, like, map to the same set, because that's how we divided up our memory into sets. And this means that this, and this, these accesses all map to the same set. All but one of them use set 0. The other access is to element 511, and 511 maps to set 127 based on this numbering. So that's separate. So I will start with the set 0 accesses. So we're going to have a miss, and we have one place we can fit things in set 0. So then 0 holds array of 0 to 3. And then we access array of 2. That's an array of 0 to 3. That's a hit. Then we access array of 512. That's not in 0 to 3, so it's a miss. And afterwards, we hold array of 512 to 515. Then we access 514. That's a hit. We access array of 1. That's not in array of 512 through 515. That's the contents of set 0. That's the only place we're going to look. So that ends up being array of 0 through 3 after that. Then we have a hit when we access array of 3, and then we access array of 513. That's going to be a miss. It's not an array of 0 through 3, and we're going to bring in array of 512 through 515 again. And we have the one extra access from the other set. That's going to be a miss, and we're going to make set 511, because it's going to contain the array at 508 through 511. And counting these up, I get 5 misses. Some questions on how I came up with that answer? why don't we do this one? Or let's go to this one. So let's say we have this, we have two different arrays. What is kind of our possibilities for this? So as it says there, it depends on how array one and array two are placed relative to each other. So what is our best and worst case for this? Like, what are we looking for? So, yes. So you're saying it would be better if they're adjacent to each other in memory. You're saying you want spatial locality. Okay, so let's think about that. So they're adjacent to each other. So that means if we think of our here, if we think of our cache, I'll do this in default color. So we have our cache, which has set 0 through set 127. And we're going to have a 1 of 0 through 3 maps to set 0. A 1 of 4 to 7. And we're going to keep doing that. And we found out from the previous slide that the way the math works out, you know, when we get up to 511, we're in set 127. So then array of 1 of 509 to 511, that's going to map to set 127 just because we just keep going to the next set. And then your proposal was, let's put array of 2 right afterwards, maximum spatial locality. So we're going to put array of 2 here. And the way our cache works, the next location in memory, well, it goes to the next set. Well, we don't have a next set, so we have to go back to the beginning. So that is precisely what we're going to do. We're going to go to the beginning. That's going to map to set 0. And then array of 2 of 4 to 7 is going to map to set 1. And so on. And so that's going to mean that with this layout, these two values are always in the same set. So at I equals 0, let's say the cache starts empty, we're going to have a miss for array 1 of 0, and we're going to bring into our cache array 1 of 0 through 3. Or actually, I'll do the color-coded version here. So we'll have A1, 0 to 3. And that will be a miss on when I equals 0. And then we're going to access array 2 of 0, or maybe the other way. It's not going to actually change much. And that's going to be a miss because it's not what we just put in the cache. And we'll say replace this with array 2 of 0 to 3. Then let's go on to I equals 1. So we go to I equals 1, and we access array 1 of 1. Well, that's not array 2 of 0 to 3. It's not in there. When we're looking at set 0, that's where array 1 of 1 goes. So that's going to be a miss. And we're going to bring in array 1 of 0 to 3. Then we access array 2 of 1. That would have gone to the same place. And we're going to bring it in. And we're going to have this pattern where we get every single access is a miss. So it turns out placing the arrays right next to each other, which spatial locality said we should do that, is exactly the worst possible thing to do in this situation. And that's because we have some nice powers of two. So what's the minimum miss rate we could have? So clearly this is the maximum one, 100%, definitely the worst we can do. How low can we get this? Yeah. Okay, so your observation is the first block of a block of four is always a miss because you don't have it in the cache in any other way. And we could make all that work. So an example is that if instead we added some padding, so we have some empty space, and then we put array two of 0 to 3, make it start a little later, then when I equals 0, we're going to bring in array 1 of 0 to 3. That's going to be a miss. And then we're going to put array 2, but now array 2 of 0 to 3 goes later in the cache. So that's fine. And then when we have I equals 1, now those will be hits. That will be a hit for both of the two axes, and we'll get a hit for I equals 2, I equals 3. We won't get a hit for I equals 4 because that's not in the 0 to 3 block we got in. We'll have to bring in the 4 to 7 and so on. So we'll have, so the best we can do is a 25% miss rate. So our worst was a 100% miss rate. And our best was a 25% miss rate, where we just separated the two arrays out for me. Separated the two arrays so they weren't exactly this power of two apart, so they don't have things mapping to the same set. And that's what I have written down here. So questions on how we got our worst and best case here? And this worst case can happen in practice. So one example is that if you're storing like a big matrix and doing math on a big matrix, you often will store, you'll store our matrix. It has like a whole grid of things. And a common way you might store this is you might take each row. So you'll take this row and say the next row, and you'll store them together. So you'll store the first row and then the next row, and so on. So you'll just concatenate the rows together. That's a very common way, and that's what C will do if you declare a quote-unquote multidimensional array by default. And if you decide to do this and you go down a row, so we access, say here, going in this direction, well, that's accessing here, here, here. And if this happens to be a power of two or very close to a power of two, boy, is that inconvenient. Because you're doing exactly that bad thing we saw with our two arrays. So our solution for this is going to be, associativity. And if you think about how associativity like changes this picture, we kind of like have an associative cache is kind of multiple copies of our direct map cache. And so if this was a direct map cache of the same size, this would look like so, and we'd have, the set 0 would map here and here and here. So basically we've kind of squished our space But now we have multiple options about where to put every block of memory. And the hope is that, you know, even using the same amount of space, that should make things work out better. Okay, so questions about sort of what I'm trying to show with the mapping in this picture? So I guess another, another thing I can point out is that, right, if we have a point, I should use a color that's not blue. So if we have a point here in these caches, you know, that's going to map kind of midway in between the, right, the same distance away. So what happens when we change this cache to a two-way set associative one? What's the worst case we can have? So I went to Kelly, what do you think our worst case would be with a two-way set associative cache? So if both of the arrays start at the beginning of a cache block, our worst case is exactly the best case. Because we can store the block we're working on of each array, you know, in the cache. And the only way we can have some extra misses is if they like are if like they start in the middle of the cache block. So if we don't have full alignment. Yeah, so let's do this example here. So same thing we started with the, but now we have a two-way set associative cache. So how many misses do we have now? Who'd like some more time? Who'd still like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have, start with two or fewer misses? Okay, exactly three misses. Okay, exactly four, exactly five, six or more. Okay, so we have a reasonable consensus. And the problem gives you the observation that array 0, array 256, array 512, array 76, 68 are in the same set, and that's because that's kind of our height here. So that this height we can think of as the size of, you know, of one of the sort of ways of the cache. Right, that's the size that we have to go through before we have two things that map to the same set. So we have actually a lot more things that map to the same set. In this case, it doesn't, it's compensated for the fact that, well, compensated by the fact that we have two ways. So again, all these accesses here map to the same set, and we have a miss, and set 0 is going to contain array of 0 through 3. We have a hit, because that's there. We have a miss, and we're going to add array of 512 through 515. And we have a hit for accessing 514. Then we have a hit for accessing array of 1, because we had an extra way to put it in. We didn't have to get rid of it just because we accessed something else. Have a hit from 3. We access 511. That's going to go in set 63. Going to be a miss. And then we're going to access 513, which is still there from back when we accessed 514 and 512. Because we had extra room. So questions? How I figured this out? And how that mapping to sets works? Okay, and you can go through this exercise on your own, but you know, we can actually, so in this exercise, like, we have many more things that map to the same set, and, well, you know, even in a set associative cache, we eventually are going to run out of room, and that happens in this case. But this kind of empirically, adding associativity really helps our miss rate. So I showed you last time sort of our miss rate with direct map cache in our binary search tree simulation. You can see that most of those misses that were below when the search tree fed in the cache, like, are almost totally eliminated, not entirely, by having extra associativity. And the miss rate, even after we exceed the capacity, still goes down. And for our matrix multiply case, we had this sort of situation where we had these sort of spikes from those conflicts where our row size was exactly the wrong thing. And we can see that associativity almost got rid of that entirely. Not in the absolute worst case, but it made it a lot better. We still have a little bit of a spike, but it's so much better than it was in the direct map case. And that's just two ways. And modern processors typically are going to do, like, at least four for most caches. Okay, so we've talked a bunch about cache accesses, access patterns, but we've always dealt with reads. And we obviously want to write values. It's not very useful to read values if you can't also write them in the first place before you read them. And this is something where we're going to need to do some extra work on our caches. And there's kind of two big decisions we need to make when we have a write. So the processor's going to say, hey, I want to write this value. One decision we have to make is, you know, if that value's not in my cache, I'm going to always check if the value's in the cache. But if it's not there, what do I do? And there's kind of two options that real processors have used both of. And one is, well, that means I need to add it to the cache. And this is the option that might make sense from a locality perspective. And this is called write allocate. We can do not that option and just say, we're going to let the access go to memory, and we're just not going to do anything with it in the cache. And this is called write no allocate, or sometimes bypassing the cache. So modern caches are usually write allocate, but there's cases where on current systems you can, there's different versions of some instructions that will like disable write allocation for that instruction. Because write allocate is not the right policy for sort of every kind of thing you do in a program. In particular, it's common for do things like mem setting a huge amount of memory or copying something big from one place in memory to another. In that case, you know, if we're copying like, you know, or zeroing out like 32 megs of memory and our cache is 1 megabyte, well, if we do that with write allocate, we're going to fill up our cache with a megabyte of zeros. And because we're zeroing out 32 megabytes, even if we access some of those zeros later, probably most of them won't be cache hits anyway. And in that case, we'd rather that those writes bypass the cache, not use the cache, and just, you know, have us keep the other stuff that was their cache that's probably more important. So for this reason, sort of, processors often provide a way for software to request the write no allocate behavior. And some older processors have just had write no allocate caches, because it turns out allocating that block is hard because we have to do some extra work. And that extra work is we need to load the rest of the block. We'll talk about exactly why in a minute. The other decision we have to make is, so let's say the value's in our cache for some reason, either because it was already there, we write it earlier, or because we write allocated it. In that case, we need to decide, well, what do I do with the written value and the next level? So eventually, we want the value to make it to main memory. The question is, do we have to do that right away, or can we wait? So if we're waiting, we're going to need to remember later on, before we get rid of the value from our cache, we need to write it to memory so we don't forget about it. You know, we can never forget about a write. You'd be really annoyed if you modified a variable and just sometimes randomly we didn't keep that modification around. So we have to make sure we never forget about it, even if it gets evicted from the cache. And that's going to require some extra bookkeeping. An alternate option called write through is that we just write it right away to main memory, but then, you know, we're kind of defeating the point of the cache, which was to avoid accessing main memory or the next level of cache. So let's talk about allocate on write. And the big reason why, you know, there's a big efficiency advantage, even in cases where there's locality, you know, why you might want to not implement a write allocate policy, even if you think there's good locality in the writes, is that when there's a write, you have to fetch the rest of the cache block. And why the rest? Well, our cache blocks are usually pretty large. So like on my laptop, my cache blocks are 64 bytes. And if I'm doing, you know, a move of a typical move, right, that's like going to be a 64-bit move, an 8-byte move. So I'm going to be writing over some portion of that cache block. And if it's not already cached, that means in order to store it in the cache, I need to get I need to read this part and this part, the rest of the block. So I need to still do a read, even though that's not what the program's asking me to do. And that's kind of annoying to do, but it is something most processors have said is worthwhile, but it's not always, especially historically. And also you might avoid doing it if you think, you know, the temporal locality assumption doesn't really hold. So the way this looks is in the write allocate case, the processor says, I want to write this value 10 here, and we're going to put that in our cache and write allocate, but we have the stuff around it in the cache block. We have this whole cache block we need to have. So this here is our, you know, our cache block. And we need to fill in the rest of that cache block, and that means talking to the next level of cache or main memory. So doing our write has this extra step, even though we're not writing, even if we're not writing to memory right away. And in the write no allocate case, we just say, okay, the processor has to write this, it's not in my cache, I'm just gonna send it to memory and not do anything else with it. If the processor has to read that value again, I'll get it from memory. The memory has the up-to-date version, not a problem. So questions about write allocate versus write no allocate. Yeah?
Do you have to do write allocate if the memory you're writing to is already in the cache?
Do I have to do write allocate? So this is only a decision we make if the value's not in the cache. We totally skip this process if the value's in the cache for any reason. Does that answer your question? Okay. And I guess in particular, it would be really, really bad if we didn't write a value, update a value in our cache, but update it in memory. Yeah. You'd be really annoyed if, you know, you write to a variable, and if you read it way later, you get the right value. If you read it soon, you get the wrong value. That'd be really bad. So we're not definitely not gonna do that. Okay, so after we decide whether to write allocate, if the value's in our cache and we're updating it, we have to decide how do we also reflect that update to main memory. And the two options are that we can update main memory right away, in which case, update main memory right away, which is called write through. So we're gonna update our cache, and we're also gonna send the update to main memory, or the next level of cache at the least, to get process. And because we've sent it to the next level, we know we don't have to worry about there being an update ever again. So that's great from a sort of nice for bookkeeping. But what's not nice is that, like, let's say this is a counter, and we're incrementing it over and over. Well, I'm probably sending lots of updates to memory that we really only don't need to do because all the reads are going to be from the cache anyways. We can defer them to later and save ourselves a lot of time. So we have this other option called write back. So in this case, we're going to update our cache, and we're gonna let memory be out of sync. Memory's gonna have the wrong value. And because memory has the wrong value, we need to make sure that the right value, the one that's in the cache, doesn't go away. And the way our caches normally work is that if I were to read a value that goes to the same cache set and the replacement policy says, this is the thing we're getting rid of, well, then that value would go away. So we're gonna need to do an extra step when that value would go away. And to remember to do that, I'm gonna mark the value as what we'll call dirty, meaning that we need to clean up this value by sending it to memory, because it's dirty in the sense that we haven't finished processing it yet. So later on, when we have something that needs to replace that value, which could just be a read, we're gonna first write out that value to memory before we can actually deal with the thing that's replacing it. So it's not that we don't write it, we defer the write as long as we can, and then we do the write. And where this is gonna have a big savings is if we're writing a value over and over again, well, we'll only actually send it to the next level of cache from main memory when we're finished caching it, which is presumably after we do all those repeated writes. Some questions about write back. So this notion of whether a value is dirty or not means that when we implement a write-back policy, we're going to have an extra bit of metadata. So in addition to our valid bit and our tag bits and our LRU information, we're going to have a dirty bit for each block to let us remember, is this a value I need to clean up by writing it to memory before I get rid of it? So when our cache value stores a value that we haven't sent to the next level yet, will be marked as dirty, so we remember before evicting it to write it out there so it's not forgotten about. Some questions? Dirty bit. So as an example of how this works, so let's say I want to modify address 04. So this is the part the processor is telling me. 04, set it to 0xFF. This cache, in order to do that, well, I'm going to divide it into tag, index, and offset. In this case, the index is 0, the tag is 00001. So I look in index 0 here. And I need to load that value, since we have, according to the top of the slide, a write allocate write back cache. So in order to load that value, I need to replace something here. What are we going to replace? Well, we're going to replace the least recently used way, which according to our bookkeeping information is in way 1 in the first index. Presumably this is way 0 on the left and way 1 on the right. Before we can replace that, we check that whether it's dirty or not, and it is. You know, so that's our least recently used block, and we have to write it back. So we're going to actually write to memory a different thing as part of this write. Then we have to read in this block because the processor is writing 0x04's value, but we need the value of 0x05 address in the block. We have to get that from the next level. We didn't have it cached. So we're going to write that back, put that in a cache. We're going to mark the block as dirty because the value here, 0xFF, we didn't write it to memory yet. And we're going to update our LRU information. Questions on everything we did just to write a value where we happened to get unlucky and it replaced another dirty value. And if we were doing write no allocate and write back still, we would just send it directly to memory in this case. We wouldn't get that far. So let's do a little exercise here. So here, let's say I have, go back to a write allocate write back scenario. Here I have my contents on my cache. And let's go through these accesses, and let's say they're performed alone. So let's don't try to consider like cumulative effects. Just start at the cache at the top. Do the writing one byte. Start at the cache at the top. Do the reading one byte from 5.2, and so on. And the question is, where would we have to read a value from the next level of cache, and where we have to write a value to the next level of cache? And remember, something that happens with writeback is sometimes, usually in fact, the value we're writing is not the one that we just accessed. It's a different value that happens to go to the same set. Who'd like some more time for the first part, writing 1 byte? Okay, so who thinks we're going to read something from the next level as part of that write of 1 byte? Thinks we're going to write something to the next level as part of that write of 1 byte? Okay, so a bunch of people. Who thinks we're going to do neither of those things? Thinks we're going to do both of those things? Okay, so let's talk about this. So we're accessing address 0x33. So in our cache, this is going to be offset 1, and 3 is, so this is offset 1 and index 1. So this goes in here. And we check if the tag matches. The tag is 001100. Oh, well, that happens to match exactly here. So this is a cache hit. And what we're going to do is we're going to modify this byte here. And then we're done. We don't need to talk to memory. We don't need to write to the next level. We're going to modify this cache. The next level is not going to know anything about this access until much later. So to do that particular write, there's no next level access whatsoever. I think I have a slide for this, yeah. That's a cache hit. Some questions on how I got that answer. So the value is already in the cache. We just modify the value in the cache. We make sure it's marked as dirty. But the way writeback works, if there's nothing being replaced, there's no need to talk to write to the next level. And we aren't don't have to read in the block anew, right? It's already there, so there's nothing to read in. So how about our next part, which is reading 1 byte from 0x52. So who thinks there is going to be a read from the next level or main memory? Okay. Few people. Who thinks there's going to be no read from the next level or main memory? No clue. Okay, bunch, no clue. So let's do this access. And this is a read. For the most part, we're going to follow the same procedures we follow in our earlier examples. So can someone tell me what is our index and offset for this address? Or how should I figure that out? What's a good first step? Anyone? Yeah. Convert it to binary. Okay. So we have 0101 0010. We have one offset bit and one index bit. So this is going to be set 1 offset 0. And our tag is going to be 0101 00. So I look in set index 1. I look for this tag. It's not there. This is a cache miss. So then the question is, what do we evict? Well, but first of all, since it's a cache miss, that tells me it's definitely a read from the next level. We have to return whatever values in memory at that address to the processor. The only way we can do that is by getting that value somehow. It's not here. So I'm going to evict something, and my LRU information says this is what we're evicting. So that's what we're replacing. In order to replace that, we're going to, oh, I have this marked. Do I have this marked? Yeah. We're going to have to insert that value there which means that we're going to have to take out the old value, write back the old value that was marked as dirty. So we're going to have a write, and we're going to have to read from main memory the actual block that we want to cache now. So that's both a write of a different value, the one that was previously in the cache where the value that was read is going to go, and a read of the value that we just read from the next level because we don't have it here locally. Some questions on how I got that answer? So let's figure out our last case. So here we have address 50. So this is 01010000. This is set 0 offset 0. So it goes up here. And we're going to have to replace something here. And the LRU information says this is what we replace. And that is not dirty. So I can just discard it and forget about it. I don't need to write back that value because it's the same as when I got it from main memory or the next level of cache. So I'm just going to take this out, you know, and replace the tag with the value from 50 and 51 and update the tag to correspond to address 50. And I think I have that. That modification noted here. Question, yes?
The LRU, is that referring only to the second block? So like,
question, is the left block one? Yes. So when I have this LRU bit, I'm saying that this is way zero, the leftmost one, and this is way one. And LRU is the least recently used. So I update it to one when I use zero, because I just use zero, so it's most recently used. One is least recently used. Does that answer your question? Yeah, so I guess that confuses it. So that's a big confuses people because, like, yeah, we're updating it to the one we didn't use because it tells me where am I replacing next. Okay, other questions? Okay, so we have another exercise with the different type of cache you can go through on your own, but so one thing mentioned is we have this write through policy, and you know, I'm looking at write back. That is the more common policy these days, but both write back and write through seem kind of problematic because in the case of write through, well, if we do lots of writes, that's going to spend a lot of time accessing memory. That seems really slow. In the case of write back, even if we don't, we can do a bunch of writes and then we do a bunch of reads, and those need to evict things. That causes writes. It's going to spend a bunch of time that seems kind of inefficient. But writes, the effective cost is actually a lot lower on most processors because they have this idea called a write buffer. And that they'll have kind of this extra piece of storage by the cache for values that are in the process of being written. And the idea is that when we have something like a value being replaced and we need to write back the old one, we put the old value in here as we're writing it back, and we say, now we're ready for the new value. Because it's in the buffer, we're not going to forget about it while it's in the buffer. This does make the cache more complicated because we have to check in the buffer. So if I evict a value and then you ask to read that value right afterwards, I have to make sure I still find it if it hasn't made it to memory yet. So it does make things more complicated, but as long as we don't fill up the buffer, the writes effectively are instantaneous. Now, obviously, we can fill up the buffer, so that happens sometimes, but in sort of typical operation, many programs won't, so it will kind of seem like that write, those writes and that cost of that eviction that needs to write back a value will be very low. And kind of to finish up, we mentioned when we introduced caches that we had this kind of trade-off that kind of bigger caches are slower, and also more associativity is slower. And this is our trade-offs that sort of cache designers are sort of navigating when they decide exactly what a cache looks like. You know, so you can, you know, get more cache hits by making a bigger cache, but each of those hits will be slower. You can have sort of a higher effective cache bis rate by having more levels of cache, and, but that's going to make the misses slower, probably. You can, So there's different design trade-offs you can make, and that's what people making processors navigate. And kind of the primary way that this happens in practice is that you can run a simulation of the programs you care about, you know, and figure out what is it like with this cache versus that cache, and you know, well, this cache takes this much space, this cache takes that much space, and all that, and that's how they make their decisions, is that they, you know, have a simulator and they like know what programs they are targeting, because it depends on the program. And then that's how they decide, this is the design we're going to put in this processor. So that's where I'll finish up today. So next time we'll talk about TLBs, which are the super specialized caches for virtual memory that make virtual memory fast in practice.